Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Our friend Richie Neal is with us, Congressman from the 1st District, a Democrat. Richie, how come Martha Coakley lost again?
Well, I think there were a variety of reasons, not the least of which is on the Democratic side for an open seat, you're always going to have a primary. And I think on the Republican side, you are not likely to have a primary. And that's exactly what happened this time around. So Governor-elect Baker was not caught up in the quicksand of battling with somebody in his own party over a variety of arcane issues. Instead, he was able to spend his time appealing to those suburban independent voters and to blue-collar Democrats. And clearly, he nailed down the entire Republican base. And Attorney General Coakley, she had a more difficult time, largely because she had to go through a convention, she had to go through a primary, and she took some lumps along the way. And in addition, one of the other problems that you have with fundraising is that the Republican candidate wakes up the day after the primary in financial superb shape. The Democrat is generally behind, and trying to get up on television right away has always been a challenge for the Democratic candidate.
Behind because she has spent all her money in the primary.
That's exactly right.
Right.
The point that the base of the Democratic Party, which tends to be still in the old cities of Massachusetts, the turnout is not the same as it is in the suburban communities.
I wanted to pursue that. You mentioned that the last time we spoke. I wanted to ask you about that. So where's the greater turnout?
You would find those suburbs around Boston within the 495 Beltway,
right?
Many of which I represented at one time.
Really?
Yes, including Bellingham and Milford and towns like that. And they really see the trend line now as to keeping D or R next to their name, but voting R in those suburban communities. And the independents.
So they're blue dogs, in other words.
They're blue dogs, but the independent is the overwhelming voter. And I always categorize them as being very much part of the Boston phenomena of urban growth, but specifically, I think they're the EMC employee. They have arrived in the state by the thousands. And I had a strong contingent of those employees in the Milford area. And they don't have those same habits that you grow up with in Massachusetts about party affiliation and voting for people that you know, because generally they don't know the candidates. But they respond very convincingly to the message that's offered. And Baker argued for a smaller or more limited government, less taxation, welfare reform. And I think in those instances, it played very well with those independent voters.
You use the term EMC, I'm sorry?
That's a company that's located, it's a huge data storage company that's located right in the 495 area of Milford and Franklin, and they employ thousands of people. And Joe Tucci, who runs the company, is an old friend of mine. But I know exactly that those are the individuals who have purchased homes in the Uxbridge area, in Milford, in Bellingham, and those communities around 495, and they just are not wed to the same sort of party loyalties that many of us have grown up with in the state. They move from election to election, and there's great fluidity to their decision-making.
Okay, so now you've been talking in the last couple of conversations about independent voters. I'm interested in your definition of independence, because the reason I ask you this is that I'm an independent. I was raised by Democratic parents, but I get a choice. I can be unenrolled and therefore walk in and get a Republican ballot or a Democratic ballot. That's the state law, which I think encourages this. How did that state law ever get passed?
Well, more and more the trend line has been across the Northeast for people to embrace the label of independent. Here's what you want to focus on, and I can ask you as a pollster would if you were on the phone with them.
Great.
The pollster would say to you, Mr. Chartok, did you request, as an independent, a Democratic ballot or a Republican ballot in the last election?
Yeah, and I would say I requested a Democratic ballot.
Okay, and then they would say, did you request a Democratic ballot in the election before that?
I would say, yes, I did.
Okay, and then they would say, did you request an independent, did you as an independent request a Democratic ballot in the election before that?
Right.
Okay, so here's what they would conclude after those three questions to you.
Right.
You are an independent, but you lean Democrat.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, for the pollster, you become a get for Election Day. because you might say you're an independent, but the fact that you requested a Democratic ballot means that it's likely if they can get you to the polls,
right,
you're going to vote Democratic.
Right. That's right. But so your definition of independent, do we really have independent voters, or do we really have something else who just takes advantage of this law that allows me to be unenrolled and take a ballot in either primary?
Well, I think across the state you could see more and more evidence that independent voters lean Republican.
Interesting.
And that's the Charlie Baker phenomena, the Scott Brown phenomena. We've had a history of electing Mitt Romney and Bill Weld and Paul Cellucci. And that's the reality of it. And they tend to look to the executive's job as the one who is sort of the one who has a magnifying glass on the legislature. And they tend to react to those issues of spending.
So the future for Democrats in Massachusetts, what warning, thou shalt not, comes out of this election in which Coakley narrowly loses to Charlie Baker?
Well, I must tell you that I think that the convention that we attend as Democrats is decidedly left, and it's far to the left of the Massachusetts electorate. And the problem is you have to nail down the base as a statewide candidate, and then you have to move to secure that huge number of independent voters in the middle. But many of our candidates are really wounded at the convention, and it's very hard for them to gain traction afterwards. Now, I thought we did a good job with Senator Warren by keeping an opponent that she had off that ballot at the convention. She did not want that because obviously that would have taken them to a primary, and then in a primary, rather than her being able to, at that time, to have concentrated on Senator Brown, she would have had to concentrate on beating her Democratic opponent. And there's a very short window in Massachusetts, unlike some other states. We usually have a primary in September, but we have a general election in November. Mm. There's not much more than a five-week period. So if you're down in financing, and if you've come through a very difficult primary, it sometimes is very hard to gain your footing.
And yet at the Democratic Convention, as I remember it, Martha Coakley was not the choice.
She was not the choice. Exactly the point.
Steve Grossman was, and yet she wins because she has a statewide reputation, a statewide position. Is that
she
right?
She did, but I would couple it because I think you really hit the nail on the head, and that is I am not sure a lot. I would say this. Most of Steve Grossman's supporters voted for Martha Coakley, but I can tell you this. It was not monolithic.
Ah. And what do you make of that?
Well, I think, again, you're coming out of a hard convention and where he wins the convention. You're coming off a hard primary where she wins the primary.
But there are a lot of unhappy people.
There's a lot of ill will. Yes, that's exactly the point.
Wow. If you were giving her advice, would you tell her, okay, you've had your shots. Don't do it again?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there comes a time when it's over. And I think in the case of the Attorney General, I think she's recognized that. I think that she's not talking about running for anything else again.
Okay, one last moment here on this part of our conversation on Bishop McGuire died at 95. You had a special relationship with
him? I knew him very well. I knew him from the day that he arrived. He had actually been a secretary to Cardinal Cushing. And he was in the Archdiocese of Boston for many years. And then when he had the opportunity to come to Springfield, it was one that not only did he maintain, but when he had a chance to go back to Boston upon retirement, he decided not to. He decided to stay amongst what we would call the flock. And I thought that his legacy is that if you built if you wanted to construct a sign around the Diocese of Springfield, which includes all the four Western Massachusetts counties, I think that the sign from him would have said, "Welcome."
Big tent.
Big tent. He was not one who was a doctrinaire. He was very welcoming. He thought that it was obviously important to implore Catholics to do certain things and to embrace teachings, but he developed great relationships with every other group, strong relationships, and he spent a good deal of time at it. And I think that when he died, the testimonial to him in his life really was that he had really been amongst the people. And I can tell you this, in all of the years he served as bishop, never once did he call me or ask me for a vote on any issue. We maintained a social relationship, and we would talk from time to time, but he was always more inquisitive about how I'd arrived at a position than he was the actual vote that I had cast.
Richie Neal, it's always such a pleasure to have you with us. I hope you know that that's heartfelt and that you've done so much for this station with your continued appearances because, you know, you always teach us something, and I so appreciate it.
You're a pro, Alan.
And we're going to come back one more time in the series, and when we do, we'll find some things to talk about.